Welcome to the War Report on Public Education. The future of education is an important concern for our time. Where it's heading, how it's evolving, and the influence corporate America has on its outcome. The War Report on Public Education provides critical news, analysis, and perspectives on the what, why, who, where, when, and how of both the new corporate state elites campaign, the Machiavellian agenda to destroy the nation's public education system, and the rising public resistance movement to defend and defeat this Machiavellian agenda. And now, here is our host, Dr. James Abington Miller, Jr.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of the War Report. We have almost a complete full house, and we are going to go right to it, and so we have as much time as possible. Tracy, are you there?
Yes, I'm okay. Here.
All right. I want to start with Tracy, and then after that, I want everyone to take a quick turn at introducing themselves, and we'll get into the show. Tracy, lead us off with telling the public who you are and what you do, and then we'll pass it on down the line.
Okay. I'm Tracy Lee. I'm a Detroit public school teacher and an educational activist, and I have been connecting the dots for several years now and belong to quite a few different groups on social media and in my local area. And I'm really concerned about the attack on public education as it is in black and brown communities, especially in the Detroit public school system that we're seeing, and those other communities around us, such as in Flint, Pontiac, Ypsilanti, and those types of areas that consist mostly of black and brown children.
Okay. Let's go with whomever really wants to step up.
This is Herman Neal.
Can you say who's in the room?
Board of Education, I want to say happy holidays to everyone. And one of the things that I'm outraged is that our school system has been hijacked by some barbarous heathens that don't care about the education of our kids.
Okay. Herman, are you on a speakerphone?
I guess I am.
Go to your handset, please. Okay. Next down the line.
Well, my name is Madison Page. I am co-founder and CEO of Bold Blue Media Alliance. We're a political services company. Focused exclusively on serving state and local Democrats and helping them move into electoral victory. I'm also the director of Go Left America, which is the Citizens Engagement Empowerment Division of our company. We are committed to working with people in their communities about issues that they care about and that they're working on, helping to amplify those issues and making sure that they have all the tools in their arsenal that they need to be able to advance the progressive cause wherever they happen to be. We are very, very honored to have been working very closely with the Detroit School Board, educators in Michigan, across the state, and other coalition groups and organizations that have been working very hard on the ground for a number of years in the state. We've been very, very honored to be able to work collectively with them, and I'm thankful that you have invited us here tonight to talk about this very important issue.
Okay. Elena?
Hello, this is Elena Herrera, Detroit Public Schools, representing District 2.
Now, Elena is a former guest on the show. You remember, Elena, about a year or so ago that we did a show together with Tom and Helen Moore. So we have a history, you and I. Now, Detroit.
Okay.
Everyone knows that I'm from Detroit, born and raised. I still consider it my hometown. I have been keeping as close an eye on what's going on in Detroit as I possibly could from more than 2,000 miles away. The title of this show, I use the word the mess that is the public education in Detroit and beyond. want to talk about that mess, and I'm being very polite when I use that word, and I want to approach it this way. What is the current mess, which is another way of saying the current state of public education in Detroit and beyond? And then the back half of that is, what is the fate of public education in Detroit and beyond going forward? A little history, Elena, from our show over a year ago. Helen Moore stated that she and Rosa Parks filed the first lawsuit against a state attempt to take over public education. Am I correct? You remember that?
That's correct.
And if so, what year was that?
That was in 99? Was that in 99?
That's what I thought.
It was Moore versus the state of Michigan. I looked up the Supreme Court case when I first got appointed to the board, and I saw that it was Moore versus the state of Michigan.
Right, 1999. So that predates, by just a couple of years, No Child Left Behind. But it would appear that the mess was brewing way before 2002. Can we start with that history, leading up to how we got to where we are now? Anyone can touch on that?
May I interrupt and ask who's on the call? Who's in the room?
Oh, you got Herman Davis, Elena, and you got Tracy, and you got Madison, and me.
Okay. All right. So Herman could probably give a better history. So how about if I start this and Herman, you jump in, or vice versa?
Go right ahead, Elena.
Okay. I wanted to say that I want to give a little background, but there's also another theory that I would like to share that has never been made public about what actually happened. But during the first takeover under John Engler in 1999, both takeovers are very similar to each other in that both of them came at the same time as a bond proposal for Detroit Public Schools for the people of the city of Detroit to vote upon ourselves a tax to rebuild our school buildings and restore our school buildings. Both takeovers came at the same time as we had proposals to pass bonds, so there was millions and millions of dollars that was pouring in that the people had voted to pay for new buildings. The first takeover, there was an elected school board when that first takeover came. We were not broken, we were not failing, but the newspapers and the media and the drumbeat was for failure and takeover. And there was I'm going to share this, and I don't think that this has been publicized ever in its proper context. But someone who researches Detroit schools and was very, very close to the bond issue, knew everything that was going on, who is a parent and a citizen and a voter, told me that there was a point where in 1999, Bush was still the president, and Engler was in office, and Detroit Public Schools was about to be penalized for turning in Title I reports late, for not turning them in on time. The elected school board at the time had to tell the feds, we cannot be responsible for that because we don't get the money. It goes to the state treasury first. It goes to Lansing, and then Lansing disperses it to us. Many people in Detroit know that when the bond was passed, the bond money was not released. So the people are getting angry because we voted for this bond and there was no movement, there was no action. But the state would not release the bond money to Detroit. The state treasurer was holding on to it and we had no way of getting it, even though we had voted for it. So the feds at that time, according to this source, and I'm sure that this could be researched more deeply, the Fed said, if Lansing is not submitting the reports for Title I, then the money is going to go directly to Detroit. Granholm, by then, was governor. Granholm panicked. This is a theory that has not been researched.
She was a Democrat, right? Let's say she was a Democrat.
Yeah, there's no point in making those distinctions in Michigan, but I'll continue on it. So when Granholm was elected, it was theorized by many people who knew the situation well with the school bond money that the school bond money would go to Lansing, and it was so much money. It's the largest pot of money that comes into the state. Detroit Public Schools money was the largest pot of money that comes into the state. And when it was not dispersed to Lansing first, Granholm sent in Robert Bob to take over the district. When we lost control of our district, that means that Lansing then regains control of our money. And there's a theory that, to me, is irrefutable because it's the only thing that makes sense. Lansing had to have control of that money. So they created this narrative, which is... How much money was that, Herman, that first bond?
$1.5 billion.
That's B with a billion, B. $1.5 billion. So Lansing now, it doesn't have first crack at that money to disperse it to Detroit. Lansing now has to find out a way to quickly take back that money. The bond money, which I refer to as the piñata, the Title I money is a piñata of Michigan. It's the largest pool of money in the state, and it's federal money. But if Detroit has direct control of it, Lansing loses control of it. So everybody that's grabbing at it first no longer can do that if it's given straight to Detroit. So what happens immediately, a takeover, which was a completely false narrative of Detroit being broke and Detroit failing.
Was she able to do this according to existing legislation, or was special legislation passed in order
Good question. Public Act 10 was passed before that, and that was, I believe, Public Act 10 was the first one that enabled her to do that. Then it became Public Act 72, which then allowed for emergency financial takeover, and then Public Act 4 came following 72, because that didn't give them as much as they wanted, because once they had all that, they wanted to be able to control the curriculum, because that would give them control of the textbook contracts and everything else that comes in. So they needed full control of everything. And the school board in office now, this group of us in office now, have challenged every single move that they have made to take money away from our district. The textbook contract, which just sent Barbara Bird Bennett to jail in Chicago, she was here first with Robert Bob. Robert Bob came to Detroit having met Granholm at the inauguration of Obama. They met there. He talks her into bringing him here, which probably wasn't hard. He comes to Detroit. He brings Barbara Bird Bennett with him as his chief accountability officer. She then gets this contract for, I think it was, Herman, tell me, was it $45 million for that book contract? For books that were from a contractor that she worked for before coming here.
Right. I believe about $40 million.
And so Barbara Bird Bennett brings, it was actually the largest textbook contract in U.S. public school history. She comes here and does that when they closed half of the schools. So we have tons and tons of books that were 10 years old that could not be used. Our students didn't even learn about the Euro because they were old books that she got from her previous employer and got a huge kickback for doing it. She's now in jail for that. She got sentenced already. But the better part of this story is that Robert Bob brought her to Detroit. He hired her, and then she hired him as a sub. So he was a subcontractor under her. So Robert Bob was over her and under her while she was in Detroit. When she finished looting Detroit, she went on to Chicago. In Chicago, they covered all that up until after Rahm Emanuel's election was over with. I guess they were really busy covering for poor Rahm Emanuel because he had police murders and book thefts and everything else to cover up. Emanuel gets elected, and immediately following the election, the Barbara Bird Bennett story breaks. But now, how do you explain that Detroit never investigated her, never went after her, because every crook was involved with her? And that's why it was so important for them to get academic control, so that they could get the textbook contracts as well.
Elena, let's bring in Herman. Herman, do you have any more to add?
Okay. The basic thing is, it wanted to control that money across the country. $650 billion of educational funds. You've got these folks got their hands out and wanting to be able to control that for the Family and Friends Project, that I call it. And the thing is, what we're concerned about now is we want to file about four different lawsuits because we've got to lean on the Headley Adjustment, which is that Article 9, Section 25 through 29, about the limitation on taxes, refunding, or transferring excess revenues, because we've got to reach in and be able to identify those expenses of state government and those that were illegal, mind you, illegal, that they have taken our money.
So we go back to 1999, 2000, and we move forward to Snyder, and
right.
he accelerates things with, what is it, the emergency management law of, what year was that, the first one? That you got, that the unions were able to nullify, and then he got a second emergency management law. Take us through that.
Okay, well, we need to back up a little bit, though, to back up to the first takeover. Is it okay? Can I continue?
Sure.
Okay, the first takeover was a removal of the elected school board and a replacement with the appointees of the state, which is what Duggan and Snyder are trying to do now. But the first, this is important to note because we got the right to vote back in 2005. The people voted 3-1. In Detroit to get back our elected school board, even though we were never asked about losing it. When we got our school board back, the elected school board was completely encumbered with the contracts that those crooks had made, and they couldn't get out of those contracts. So that meant that look at us as a colonial nation, and we fight for freedom. And then once we have freedom, the colonizers are making us pay their debt. That's the same exact thing that happened to Detroit.
Well, can I say a little
bit? Sure. Go ahead.
I would like to say this.
Also,
because
hold it, please. Herman, you want to say something before she...
Yeah, before you go forward, I just want to move back to where you were talking about the appointed board that they're trying to do now is... We got to remember that the appointed board had no authority to do anything. That's why they want to do it again, because they control the money and everything.
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay, Herman is very correct, and so is Elena, both. I have to say something, though. You know, there's always been a Jim Crow racist myth that black people are dumb and they're unable to govern themselves, and Snyder has used this racist lie to strip the Detroiters of their American democracy and citizenship in Detroit by taking away their voting rights, okay? And it's been done even through Engler taking away the board. It's constant. It's never ending. And in doing so, they create an educational apartheid in Michigan, if you will. We have two separate and unequal school systems. One for the white students. They're under the Michigan Department of Education board. And then you have the children of color, the black children, the brown children, under Governor Snyder. I mean, why is it that they have to have a dictator? They're not allowed to have what every other school has all around in the suburbs and things like that. This is an encroachment on the local economy.
Well, absolutely.
It's also important.
That's absolutely true, and that was one of the things that we pointed out in the Title VI complaint was that we
Excuse me for a minute, Madison. Are you on a cell phone or a speakerphone?
I'm on a cell phone.
We could barely hear you. Okay, you need to speak louder because we could barely hear you.
Can you hear me better now?
Marginally. Go ahead, though.
Okay. Hold on. Let me make sure. So, yeah, I mean, it's absolutely true that we had that was one of the things that we pointed out in the Title VI complaint, for example, that we do have essentially what boils down to two separate school districts And, I mean, that was just one of the things. We have the school, State Board of Education, that's handling most of the state, and where there are white students, and then black students are mostly under this emergency management system, which is completely anti-democratic. We also...
And very inferior, extremely inferior.
And it is inferior. The State Board does a far better job with the education, and there's accountability and all these other things that are sort of baked into the system that don't exist under the emergency management. And one of the other things that we uncovered in our research, when we were doing this research, it was over 2,000 hours of research. We talked with more than 400 people, and we did. We actually, here's the thing. It is separate, and it's not even equal, but it has a deleterious effect on the local school. So when you shut down a school in a particular neighborhood, property values drop. And every single time you shut down a school, property values drop to the point where now there's no money, right, circulating. There's no money to put back into the schools. And then what do we hear from the powers that be? We hear, oh, well, there's no budget. That's why we have to do this. And one of the other things that we uncovered, and this was a little while later, but we uncovered that it was interesting. School closures, we discovered sort of on a national level anyway, that during presidential cycles, there were more school closures. We actually discovered this. We put it on our website over at Go Left America because we were not looking for this information, but we looked up school closures because we wanted to find out if there was any patterns. And we suspected that the school closures were happening more in lower-income communities, but we uncovered that what we discovered in our search was that in presidential election years, there were more school closures proportionally than there were in non-presidential years, which we thought was really, really interesting, considering the fact that public schools are also, typically used for, some public schools are used for voting. So,
for voting,
really just sort of, sort of plays into this very anti-democratic system where you have people who have been stripped of their democratic, rights, stripped of their voting rights, and really made, like you said, subjects. To like you're
right.
Like it's just like you're subjects in some type of a kingdom, and you have no rights.
Yes, we're colonial subjects. Yes, we are exactly colonial subjects here.
Yeah.
Let me come in for a minute because I got a message saying this is hard to follow from one of the listeners. So let's try and put it together in a more coherent fashion. My question initially was to try and get at the history leading up to where we are now, how we got to where we are today. Today, it's a mess. How did we get here? If I understand what's happening, and I took it back with what Helen Moore said over a year ago, that when she and Rosa Parks filed the first lawsuit against a state for seeking to take over a democratically elected school board and school public school district. Now, that was 1999. The war on public education started before No Child Left Behind, which 2002. It had been simmering, festering. Oh, I can go back to probably the 1980s. But during the early 1990s, and this is for the person who said she was having a hard time following it and anyone else who may be like her. Beginning with Reagan here in the United States, and my listeners know this story, Pinochet in Chile, Margaret Thatcher in England, and Yao Ping in China in the 1980s. There was a move to privatize public institutions, the safety net, from that time forward. In the 1990s, there were universities mostly the Ivies, from what I've been able to find out so far, who were starting to give courses on how to privatize public education. This was, again, this predates Bush and No Child Left Behind. I have stated over and over again that the war to privatize public education, and that to me is the bottom line, the privatization of public education, and as you said, Herman, the amount of money that would come with that, started a long time ago. Michigan, Detroit, if I understand what you were saying about your Democratic governor who saw the opportunity to get back the $1.something billion that she was going to lose control over, instituted the mechanism by which she could regain control of this. This, to me, would be more of a formalized attack in the beginning of a war on public education in Michigan. And everything that has happened subsequent to her movement opened the door for subsequent governors to make further moves. And, of course, I have argued repeatedly that No Child Left Behind, 2002, in my view, was a formal declaration of war on public education, hence enabling governors, states, cities, counties across the nation to formally declare and start to act on the declaration of war on public education. I'm hoping that will clarify the confusion that some of the listeners were reporting to me, because everyone was giving their perspective and obliterating some type of timeline. Now, if I'm correct, let's bring us to the current state of affairs as it relates to Snyder. When he got in, he took the war, and this is my view, and again, I try and stay up on what's happening at home. He took the war to the current fever pitch that it is now by getting the legislature to pass Emergency Management, the first act. Let's take it from there to bring us to what the current state of the war is in Detroit and the surrounding school district, black and brown school district. Anyone want to go first?
They have control all of the minority school districts and have pretty much put each one of them in the red. And it's been on purpose. They've been taking the money out of the system. And as a matter of fact, here in Detroit, they've even laid off the inspector general, because he's the one that investigates the abuse of finances in the educational programs. So they've laid off that department. So all of those things are happening because they know that we are continuing to open the door to those events, and that we are about to clutch on some of the legal aspects of how are they continuing to get away with it.
Okay. Everybody, Herman is elected school board member that's almost like in exile, along with Elena. Herman or Elena, explain what I just said.
Okay, Herman is chair. Herman is our elected chairman. And what you have just said, laying out the privatization from 1973 to present, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. That was an excellent chronology of what has happened for the neoliberal agenda of privatization that the U.S. has been able to really export through the IMF and to the World Bank by forcing other countries into austerity by creating debt for them. And it has simply come home to a domestic front.
Thank you, Elena, because that's the message that I've been preaching for 2 years. You got it. Nail it. You nailed it. Thank you.
Right. Yeah, that's easy to do to black and brown communities because they're already so vulnerable. They already have a narrative against them being able to be self-governing. And so the media picks it up, and the general public is completely accustomed to hearing that. So it's an easy thing to say. It's either corruption, or it's incompetence, or it's the winning combination of both. But whatever it is, and I do not want to let this program go without talking about the very important role of the nonprofit organizations in this takeover, because it could not be done without what I call the banks in drag, the 501c3s that have been lining up for contracts and getting all kinds of contracts, collaborating behind the scenes with emergency managers and the governor and the write-in mayor. Detroit, the city of Coleman Young, has a white mayor who was written in, who is now under federal investigation for demolition contracts and corruption, and we'll see where that goes. But right now we are under the most corrupt regime we have ever witnessed in this state, and that's saying a lot.
Let me come in here. That's, okay. Elena. Born and raised in Detroit, that's saying a hell of a lot. We have been almost like Illinois in terms of our corruption, from the unions to the government to the city, county, state, from when I was born and before. So that's saying a lot. If you're saying,
yeah, it is. It is. And but I do want to say that Mayor Kilpatrick is in jail serving 28 years for far less than anything Duggan does on a day-to-day basis here in plain sight. No bid contracts, cronies, friends. The only difference is that Kilpatrick's friends actually really did the work. So as far as what the nation believes about Detroit and Coleman Young and Kwame Kilpatrick, who couldn't possibly be compared to each other, but except for the fact that they've been utterly demonized by a press, it's so easy to demonize a black or a brown city like Detroit. So in order to be able to understand what has happened here, you have to really almost clear your mind of everything that you've ever read about in the mainstream media about Detroit.
That is true. And we've got to remind everyone that Engler is still involved in this situation because Snyder worked with Engler.
Engler has some education contracts. Yeah, he's still involved in privatization of education, so Engler is still in the wings.
That's right.
There's complete shadow government running everything in Detroit. It's completely shadows running everything. So, in order to be able to understand that, that's what is really essential.
Okay, let me do a summary, because I understand everything you're just saying. Uh-huh. What you're saying is that the corruption is so widespread.
Yes.
It involves government. It involves nonprofits as a structure through which corruption can flow, and that some of the same people who are running Detroit, who are seeking to privatize Detroit now, have been in this game for a long time in different capacities, and that the corruption is so systemic that if it is ever uncovered, I think it would be a game changer.
Yes.
And that's, okay, we all agree with that?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
For the listeners, though? I'm sorry, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say that the biggest game changer, Elena, would be is if we could get an audit.
A forensic audit, yep.
Yes, a forensic audit, which is sort of equal to a receipt that account for how all this money was spent, misspent. You have to remember that Snyder's a businessman, okay, and he actually knows accounting procedures, so he knows how to hide money, waste money, use money, and we really need to get a forensic audit to find out what has happened to all the money.
There's another thing that I want to raise here before this gets away. There's two things I would really like to impart upon a listening audience. One is United Way is the it's basically serving as a money laundering clearinghouse for the nonprofit money coming through to be dispersed through the nonprofits into privatization of what once had been fine public schools with actually well-paid teachers and well-paid workers. Now everyone is sharecroppers for the nonprofits. The second thing is, it's really, really important, and I know that people feel very strongly about crime, but the crime is all over the place, but the convictions are very uneven. No white people have been investigated for any of this corruption. No white people are serving time in jail right now. Anyone who can tell me otherwise, please correct me if I'm wrong, but the low-hanging fruit is mostly black women. Barbara Bird Bennett, Kenyatta Wellborn out of Mumford High School. There's a Latina from my own district that's being under investigation by the FBI right now. No white people are being investigated or going to jail. All the victims are mostly black and Latino children. All the victims, the very, very extreme majority of the students are the victims of this madness, and the low-hanging fruit is the administrators who have taken bribes and taken money. But the culprits are going to go free.
You know, again, unlike my audience, I try to stay up to date with what's going on in Detroit and Michigan. And Elena, I couldn't agree with you more. So much so that one of the questions that I was going to ask, because this is what we're talking about here, is not only a class warfare, we're talking race warfare. And we're talking gender warfare that is happening right there in Detroit, which used to be, when I was growing up, the fifth largest city in the country, one of the most prosperous cities in the country when I was growing up.
The promised land.
It was a promised land. You know, people came from all over the country to Michigan and Detroit to find a better life. And for many of them, they did. Black, white. Right. Wasn't that many Hispanics then or Asian, but it was a black and white issue. I had a question that I raised to one of the persons on this group right now yesterday, and I've raised this for I don't know how long. Is there a single school or district in the UP that is the UP, the Upper Peninsula, that is under attack?
Like
the schools, can you hear me, people?
Yes, yes.
Okay. Is there a single school in the UP that's under attack, like the schools in Detroit and the surrounding areas? Is there a single school outside of the black and brown communities in the Detroit area and other parts of Michigan that is under attack, like the black and brown schools in Detroit and the surrounding areas?
There has been none.
Okay.
There has been none.
Okay. Here's why, I mean, I asked this question because to me it's so damn obvious. But, you know, I just came back, been back like almost a week now from my road trip. And I went to Maine. I went to Connecticut. I went to upstate New York, Massachusetts, and Baltimore, Maryland. I knew before I went on my trip that many of the states that I just mentioned, they have a sparse black-brown population, and hence I believed going out that the war, if it was a war in some of those states, much different than the war in Illinois, Michigan, Ohio, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Missouri, New Jersey, D.C., Pennsylvania, and you get the point that I'm trying to make here. And my question was to, I guess, underscore what I had found in those areas. In Maine, there was one school that they told me that was a reconfiguration, not a turnaround, not a takeover, not a closure. Maine only has 1 million people, and when I was there, on the two trips that I was there, I only saw 3 black people, okay? In Connecticut, very few black people in comparison to the majority population. They don't have the kind of war that is raging in the Midwest, the South. Massachusetts, the state, yes, they have some schools now that are up for being foreclosed on or taken over, turned around. Maryland, they're now facing that. Upstate New York, they call it the Big Five. There are four school districts that, as of legislation passed last spring, summer, on the down low, people didn't know what supposedly they were voting for, are now being warred upon to the point where they're seeking to take them over within a year or two, with New York City being one of the Big Five. So, Michigan, I think many of you would agree, has been like a ground zero for the takeover of public schools, for the money involved, and et cetera. And my calling out the question of what's happening in the UP, the Upper Peninsula, and some of the white suburbs there surrounding Detroit that are not experiencing the war that you're experiencing there in Detroit and other communities, only verifies what I've been saying for a number of years. The war itself, yes, is an economic, political war, but it also has extremely heavy elements of gender, class, and race warfare all mixed in.
Right.
Agree or disagree?
I agree with you. Yeah.
It's a combination.
So, we know where we are. X number of school districts are being warred upon. They're being threatened to be taken over, to be privatized. What, going forward the next year, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, this is the fate of public education in Detroit. What does it look like? Each of you, give me your perspective. And we got 10 minutes left. So let's make it short.
That's why we've got to key in on the first thing is that the first part of the audit that we were talking about, and where did the deficit emanate from, and the contracts and the spending that caused the deficit. And when we identify that, that's going to identify some of the people that needs to be put in jail because they've conspired with this corruption. And it's almost as bad as some of the things that have happened to some of the people that have gone to jail, the corruption. Mm-hmm. And we need to make sure they...
Right. Let me ask this. Elena, are you back on? We had lost you for a moment.
I am. Thank you. Yeah, I'm,
okay.
I'm sorry.
Okay,
yeah,
let's continue.
I would like to... Okay. May I continue?
Yes.
This is Elena. Okay, I don't want to interrupt anyone. I just wanted to say that, I don't know, the people that are in the listening audience don't know that the Detroit School Board does not get paid and has no authority. But we have a very, very strong and resistant and very resourceful group of people who are the majority of the school board. We call ourselves the School Board in Exile. Now, Herman, who had been a banker, had a friend who was who has an auditing firm, and the volunteer accountants, check this out. We have volunteers who are accountants for other school districts who come to our meetings, who read us the financial reports, who tell us how to read these reports, tell us what not to agree to, what to agree to, and so that we don't do anything that's outside of our realm because we don't have any money to hire anyone to tell us, you know, we don't have any way of knowing this stuff. So we have people that are supporting us who simply believe in the mission of public education, who understand what's happening to thousands and thousands of black children across Michigan, who stand in. These are professionals who are doing this for free. And we have professionals who are telling us how the numbers work,
where the money is, where money is missing, where things don't add up, and what we should be mindful of. And we are able to say, no, we're not going to sign on to this refinancing. No, this bond doesn't make sense. Where did this money go? Even if we are not heard, we are keeping track of all that's lost. And we have now another group. There's a group called Moratorium Now that challenged the bankruptcy with their own volunteer lawyers and plaintiffs. They challenged Jones Day, the bankruptcy law firm, in court and fought them on the bankruptcy. And they are now going to work with us to help put together a teach-in, as in a public forum for the people to be able to understand the financial situation of the district, what has happened, what has been lost, so that the elected school board will be able to make accounting for what we have done with our time. But the most important thing I want to tell you here is that this is the pedagogy here. This is a curriculum of resistance. This is a curriculum that holds up a mirror to the looters and says, this is who you are, this is what cannot happen. And we have people who are reminded they are educators, reminded that they are auditors, accountants, all manner of professionals who are stepping up. They are not people who get paid by anybody. They are people who oppose the actions of those who should have helped. They oppose the actions of the nonprofits. They oppose the actions of the Detroit NAACP, who has been at the trough from the very beginning to get private contracts in these schools. They're opposing all of these organizations that should have been helping, but instead are going behind the scenes and negotiating with the enemies in order to get their little charter school hookups. We have so many people that are working with us for free to be able to take back our public schools, that this is basically a good old-fashioned resistance movement, and we are going to take back our schools. And whether or not that looks like the public school system we had before, no one knows, because we have never been in this place before. But we are not rolling over. We are not standing down.
Okay. I want to get to Tracy and your organization, Truth.
True. T-R-U-E. We're on Facebook.
True. Yeah.
I'm one of the vice presidents of True. True, you know, we are part of the support of the resistance that Elena talked about. We are part of that. We work to support the school board in any
Absolutely.
Way we can. We also have the True Plan, which is an alternative plan to Snyder's Old Co. New Co., which is a Republican plan, and the DEC, which is the same baby wrapped in a Democrat blanket. And we work diligently as a large group of people, school board members, teachers, community members, all kinds of people came in to help work on this True Plan. It's 13 points, and it is available to be seen on the True group. But I agree, you know, 100% with Elena. You know, we do have to find out what's happened to the money through this audit, through the people that have helped us to look at things. We have had over $1 billion that we can account for that's missing, because every year that the EAA schools, which are the 15 DPS schools that were our best schools that were improved with lots of money to be the best schools we have, they were ripped away by Snyder to create this Education Achievement Authority run by the state. That we lose $50 million every year on that. And then you add that up over the course of years, you're looking at about $600 million. Then you look at the $400 million that it was taken from the school aid fund to build a stadium for a billionaire. He should be building his own stadium if he needs a new stadium for the Red Wings. We need to have an adjustment. You know, you can talk to Herman about the Headley adjustment. It's an amendment that allows for money that was misspent to be returned back to DPS. We need to have our democratically DPS school board allowed to spend money appropriately on needed services, such as wraparound services for the classroom, supplies, books, technology, art, gym, music. We also need to have highly qualified teachers that deserve to be paid as professionals with their pay and benefits, along with their pensions. And also the democratic accountability that most school districts have, not like we're being like a Nazi Germany with dictator Snyder at the helm. We really need to have our elected
Tracy,
board do what they need to do.
Tracy, I'm going to have to go to Madison because
okay,
I want to have a
fine.
Minute two to
Great.
Madison.
Okay.
What do you have to say?
So there's a lot of work left to be done. Can you guys hear me?
Yes, I can.
Yes.
Okay, great.
Yes.
So there's a lot of work that needs to be done. I think I think everybody has done so much up until this point, and we've come so far. But there's a lot more work that needs to be done. I think the key in any kind of resistance movement or any kind of progress or change that happens is a couple of things. And these are the types of things that we're doing at Go Left America and Bold Blue. On the one side, you have activists. You have people in the community who are really working hard on the issues. They're on the ground. They know where all the dead bodies are, and they know what has to be done. And at Go Left America, we're trying to work with people in their communities to try to aid them as much as we possibly can. But on the other side of that is the activists have to have the means, the acquisition of political power. Because the bottom line in all of this is who is in political power is going to make the difference. And one thing Republicans have been very good at, and even some, a DLC-style Democrat, is placing themselves into positions of political power where they can influence these types of decisions. And so on the activist level, we have to be able to pressure people. And when people are unable to be pressured, they need to know they'll be replaced. This is very important part of the equation, and we're focused on bringing those two elements, or that those two things on the same side of the coin, into fruition so that we can actually move the progress forward and help people in their communities get things done that they really have been dedicating their time and their lives to for so long.
Okay, let me come in. We only have a minute or so left. One, hopefully people, you will hear this, or you'll go to the archives when it's in archives, and you'll hear the people's story coming out of Detroit. Extremely important, because no one else, as far as I know, is trying to give them a voice so that the things that you heard today, you won't be hearing anyplace else. You won't be reading it in the papers and even online per se. This, I think, was a great opportunity for these people involved to get their stories out to the public. That's one thing. Two, is there anything else that the War Report can do to help you in the war? Three, I hope that I can come home. I know Stacy is working so hard on trying to get me there so that I can report from there, I can get involved, and et cetera. I hope we can pull that off. And lastly, but not least, we have to do another show, folks, because we didn't hear from Port Huron. We didn't hear from Flint. We didn't hear from Ipsy.
Muskegon Heights. Right.
We need to hear from them, too. I'm going to ask this group to reach out to those people, and if you can, mm-hmm. I will do another mm-hmm. show next week.
Mm-hmm.
The show that I was going to do, I won't do. Can I count on you to help me put together another show next week so that we can continue this? And with that, let me finish because my time is up. We had a great show, in my opinion. We will definitely get together again, this group, and I hope we can make it work so that I can come home and join in the resistance movement. With that, folks, I've got to say goodbye. We're out of time. Hopefully we'll be back next week, everyone. Have a good Sunday, folks, and a good Christmas coming.
All right.
Okay?
Thank you.
And
happy holidays.
All right. Yeah. All right.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you. Doug, you got
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Join us again next time as we explore and become aware of the most pressing problem of our time, education, corporate America, and their unholy alliance.